Morning.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and call the meeting to order. If everybody could please turn off or mute electronic devices. Our mission statement, the Veterinary Board protects the health, safety, and welfare of the general public as well as the welfare of animals by enforcing the licensing standards prescribed by statute for the licensing and regulation of veterinarians, veterinary technicians, veterinary premises, and animal crematories. We do have Assistant AG Mark Harris present, and Dr. Janes, could you please do the roll call?
Yes, Dr. Byrne is absent. Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. Janes is here. Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson, absent. And Dr. Ray?
Here.
We have quorum?
Yep, we have quorum.
Alrighty, so section two for the initial investigative reviews, we're gonna just go through our order. Number one, 24, 118 will be first. Number four, 24, 122 will be second. Case, so number seven, 24, 126 will be third. Number 12, 24, 159 will be fourth. And then we'll roll back from the top. So we'll go ahead and call case 24-118 regarding Lindsay Smoker DVM. I believe that the respondent and attorney are present.
Yes.
Okay.
Do you want to read the front load if you'd like?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Hi, Tracy. We'll go ahead and have you read the front load for this case.
Yes. So just, before you go on, just a second, Tracy, we're going to try to volume up just a little bit louder.
Thank you.
Okay. Let me switch programs. I have different programs on my head. I'll switch and see.
Okay.
Try again.
Okay. Excellent.
That's better.
So case 24-118, the complainant is Sandy McPadden, and the respondent is Lindsay Smoger, DVM. On October 17, 2023, Pocket, an approximately two-year-old female rescue equine, was presented to respondent for evaluation. The horse was standing on her right front coronary band instead of the bottom of her foot. The left front was severely clubbed. The horse's hind legs had severe suspensory ligament desmitis. Respondent recommended correcting the right front leg, then determining the horse's comfort and quality of life. A deep digital flexor tenotomy was performed and the horse was placed on antibiotics. The following day, the horse was monitored and started on Bute. On October 19, 2023, the horse was sedated for the farrier placed a toe extension on both front limbs. The horse was discharged later that day on an NSAID. On November 30th, 2023, respondent rechecked the horse. Due to the condition of the right front foot, pre-ingress was performed. Devitalized bone and infection were present, and respondent recommended humane euthanasia or referral. Complainant declined euthanasia, and an appointment was made for a second opinion with Dr. Howard. On December 1st, 2023, Dr. Howard evaluated the horse, and due to severity of the left front laminitis and breakdown injuries in the rear limbs, Dr. Howard felt humane euthanasia should be considered. Complainant elected to treat the horse. On December 4th, 2023, a left front deep digital flexor tenotomy and corrective shoeing was performed. Complainant felt respondent's assessment and treatment of the horse's condition was inaccurate. Then the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. It was moved and seconded that the board find errors 3222-33B3, minor records violations that are routine entries into a medical record and do not affect the horse's diagnosis or care of the animal. Some medication routes of administration and concentrations were not documented in the horse's medical record. The motion was approved with vote of 3-0.
Thank you. Okay, so we do have attorney and respondent, and just...
Yeah, David Stoll, present on behalf of the respondent, Lindsay Smoger, has a statement for you. Go ahead.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to respond to the August 6, 2024 investigative committee recommendation in this case. I am pleased that the committee had no medical concerns or issues with the veterinary care I provided in this case. With regard to the proposed minor record-keeping violation, route of administration and antibiotics was notated on the treatment sheet and plan. The route of administration of sedation was notated for the farrier, but not for the procedure. Unfortunately, the amount of concentration of epivacaine used in my regional block for procedure was not notated in my medical record. It was an oversight on my part to make the appropriate notations in my medical record. I have since revised my medical record-keeping process. Rather than treating that oversight as a violation of ARS section 32-2233D3, I'm asking you simply issue a letter of concern. Thank you.
And then we do have the complainant present, Sandy McSadden. Go ahead and come forward. Good morning. Can you please state your name for the
record? Sandy McFadden.
And then do you have a statement for today?
Correct. There were two statements that were incorrect. It was not her recommendation. It was not Dr. Smoger's recommendation for me to see a referring veterinarian. That was my recommendation. I asked if we could continue care. When the initial surgery was done, we were happy with the results. When there was a complication noted after the first surgical repair was done, she did not have toe extensions placed on both front feet. A toe extension was placed on one foot on the first day of surgery, so that's incorrect as well. When the complication happened after the first procedure, when she came out of that room, I requested the x-ray. She did not ask for x-rays. When I requested x-rays in the very beginning of this treatment, I was told that x-rays would not determine or would not change course of treatment. And it absolutely would have changed the course of treatment had we had proper diagnostics done before we ever started any of this. When the complication occurred after the first surgical, the only option I was given was euthanasia. I was given no other options. I asked if she could go to another hospital, to a referring veterinarian. That was not her recommending that. That was not her saying that. Her only option was euthanasia after a complication from surgery. And when we went to Dr. Howard, euthanasia was not the only option I was given. A course of treatment was offered to me after we did appropriate diagnostics, after we took imaging of all four of her legs, where we had her hind legs were then properly diagnosed. They were assumed to be DSLD. They were not. We had a proper diagnosis done afterwards. So the only option I was given by Dr. Smoger after the complication of her initial surgery was euthanasia. I requested to go to another veterinarian to have a second opinion done, and I was not only given by Dr. Howard euthanasia as an option. He gave me a course of treatment. He said euthanasia, or we can go through this course of treatment. And today, despite Dr. Smoger, today Pocket is walking, trotting, cantering. She is doing fantastic. Her energy budget matches that of any other horse at the boarding facility. But none of that would have happened had I not requested for her to go to another facility rather than accepting euthanasia as the only option after a complication due to that. I understand that complications happen. What I do not understand is how there was not a continuation of care or other treatment options given to me after this complication. So that is the only statement that I wanted to make today.
Thank you. The lead is Dr.
Ray. Yes, thank you. All right. So I definitely would like some opinions from the rest of the board on this one, because we have the recommendation from the IC for minor records violations. And I do see really the one I saw that was the issue was the carbocaine. I really didn't see many other problems. When you look at just the written treatment form, there's some stuff missing on there, but in the medical records it's there, so when you combine everything, it's all there from what I'm seeing. But this does say there's a four-point block with the carbocaine. My question around that is that a full records violation? Because it's a block, is it more of a letter of concern type thing? And I would like some conversation around that, what people think there, because blocks, you kind of block to the point of needing a block. So it's not always a specific volume, like if you've been an IV drug or something. So yes, it is not written a total that was done, but it's also a block, not a death or treatment. So definitely would like some conversation around there. Testimony today brings up some other questions. I don't know if anybody has any questions around that, or is that a kind of communications? Was there not a full meeting of the minds or anything there, but is that a violation? So my thoughts are kind of around that minor records violation. Like what do people want with that, or are we looking at a letter of concern?
As far as the case, the only concern, and definitely coming from the small animal world, would be to have a patient with multiple joints involved with obvious disease of some type going on. If this were a dog, I would want to have some diagnostics done on all four limbs, particularly the hind limbs, before I would proceed with treatment, especially surgery on the front. So that was my only concern. This horse had some major problems in all four limbs, and we jumped into the and did a surgery on the front leg. Again, if this were a dog, I would not proceed with doing something with the front leg if I didn't know what was going on with the hind legs.
Yeah.
Could be entirely different in the equine world, for sure. As far as the records violation, I agree with you totally. That volume, pretty minor, especially like you said, for a block. It's like sometimes when we give local anesthesia for skin for us, same thing.
Yes, it's a little bit of lidocaine or something.
Yeah, so. Did I give 1.2 or was that 1.4?
You know. Yeah. Okay. So there's that concern there. Is there any concern around additional questions? Does anybody have anything?
The testimony is from the complainant is, I hear what she's saying, but the medical records say something different. And so, you know, it does say that there is either euthanasia or referral to surgery, and, you know, the specific facility where she went was documented, and then there was a follow-up call to see how that went. So
I think that was the problem that I had, is when I was pre-reviewing it. That didn't jump out to me as a problem because it was in the medical records that
right,
had that's, done. Yeah. But then we're hearing kind of conflicting statements, which we get a lot.
Yeah.
And it's really hard because from an owner's perspective, if you felt like that was the only option you were given, I can see why you were frustrated. And then from a veterinarian's perspective, it's like, no, I did refer, but maybe more emphasis was placed on how severe this was and euthanasia, and so the referral kind of was glossed over, you know, like how that can happen. And so I feel like this is just going to be a communication disagreement. I don't think either party is going to agree that they didn't do what they did, you know, like, so.
Yeah,
that's I think it's going to be a really hard case to judge just because none of us were there and we have two conflicting statements.
But it's written in the medical record.
Yeah, which, the record.
Then we have to go with the record by law. So.
So, again, like communication is obviously the primary reason we're typically here. So, and the specialist did the deeper workup, which, again, in the medical record I read was kind of like, hey, look, we're at euthanasia, or you go to a referring vet, which to me, and maybe, you know, maybe that's the conversation that could happen, is there needs to be much further deep dive into the diagnostics and doing all this imaging and everything. And yes, you have to admire, you know, a pet owner who is going to advocate for their pet and go the extra mile. And part of that is the referring, you know, step. So it sounds like even though there was this big gap in communication, the end result for, you know, the advocation for this horse was positive. So that's tough. But yeah, I can see where there would be holes in communication, especially if everybody's speaking from their own odds, from their own, you know, experiences.
Yeah, and it can be hard to kind of flesh out what exactly went on, and that's where the written records come in handy. So.
Yeah. And yeah, for bupivacaine, that one's rough as far as a records violation because I don't know how often I see a doctor put in the milligrams.
Because it's a block.
Yeah.
I mean, the volume, that's the best thing to do, but it's also
like
it can vary
injection.
So much that, it can be really hard. So
I'm personally,
I think if you're going to do the minor records, well, if you're going to do a letter of concern rather than an actual violation, like, part of that could be just ensuring clear communication too, right? Like watching your medical records, making sure that amounts are documented and clear communication on all options with owners, like just as a, because we don't really know what happened.
Yeah, but can we do that in the records though?
Well, it's a letter of concern to say,
yeah,
I'm concerned that maybe this wasn't as clear to the owner as it could have been, but we don't know. So we can't find a violation with it because there's nothing to find. But it's just a kind of call to action, which I think maybe just sitting here probably does that, right? Like
it does,
maybe
yeah.
It's like we all need to always be reminded of our communication and whether we're being clear or not. And whether we're meeting the owner where they're at, right? Like in this course, I imagine many owners would not have even elected a second opinion due to the severity of it. That's not where this owner was at. We weren't meeting the owner where they were, right? And I think that was the bigger issue for me.
But the specialists had euthanasia on their list,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think most people would have euthanized.
Thing, yeah.
That's what
it's,
I'm
it's
saying.
It's hard, but I mean, that's...
Absolutely
do
agree,
you
but...
Do have a motion, then?
Yeah, I guess that's a question for Mark. Because it's in the record, is that something that you can include in the LOC? Because that's supposed to be for... If we see it happening, that's something that could rise. I completely understand what Dr. Jane is saying, so I want to make sure that's something that can be.
Yes, you can articulate the concern in the letter.
Okay, just about communication. Yes. Okay, so I'll make a motion to file a letter of concern in case 24-118 in regards to not fully labeled or not fully writing out how much carbocaine was used and for making sure there's clear communication in the future, even if it's documented in the medical record, make sure it's communicated properly.
Second.
Madam Chair, could you amend your motion to specify that you're dismissing the case?
Oh, yes, and dismissing that at that time.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Okay. Case 24-122 regarding Michael Robinson, DVM. Tracy, could you please read the front load?
Yes, I can. Case 24-122, the complainant is Tina Posada. The respondent is Michael Robinson, DVM. On March 4th, 2024, Groot, a 3-year-old male pain torch was presented to respondent for a cryptorchid. The respondent was unable to locate the right testicle. While in the abdomen, the horse began to wake and respondent nicked the horse's bowel. The neuter was abandoned, the horse's abdomen was closed, and the horse recovered. Antibiotics were initiated. The horse remained hospitalized at respondent for treatment and monitoring. On March 5th, 2024, complainant visited the horse and was concerned with his condition. Respondent kept the horse for continued treatment and monitoring, and later that day, complainant stated that she asked respondent to refer the horse to a specialist or obtain a consultation. Respondent became upset and refused to discuss the matter with the specialist. Respondent denies complainant requested consultation with the specialist. On March 6, 2024, respondent found the horse deceased in the barn. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. It was moved and seconded that the board find ARS 3222-32 number 11, gross negligence, failure to have a mechanism in place to provide anesthetic support to the horse when it began to wake during a surgical procedure, and poor management of complications related to the surgery. ARS 3222-32-12 as it relates to R311-5011, failure to provide respect to the animal owner by callously dismissing owner's wishes to have the horse cremated. ARS 3222-32-12 as it relates to R311-5013, failure to seek consultation or offer referral to enhance the quality of care of the horse. ARS 3222-32-12 as it relates to R311-502-H2, failure to examine the horse within 6 hours prior to surgery and document the exam in the medical record. ARS 3222-32-21 as it relates to R311-502-L6, failure to document in the medical record the treatment that was provided to the horse with respect to the details of surgery performed and the surgical complications that occurred. ARS 3222-3221, as it relates to R311-502L7A, failure to document in the medical record the concentration of xylazine, ketamine, thanamine, naxil, and gentamicin that was administered to the horse on March 3rd and March 4th of 2024. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-0.
Thank you. We do have the respondent, Dr. Robinson, here. If you'd like to go ahead and come forward.
Excuse me?
You can go ahead and come forward. Okay. Thank you. Can you please state your name for the record?
Dr. Michael Robinson.
Great. And then do you have a statement today?
Yes, I do. First of all, what happened was devastating to her, to the owner, Tina. And I understand why she's angry. I understand why she's upset. I was devastated as well. After 42 years of practice, I've done a lot of cryptorchid surgeries. The problem is we're out in the field doing it, and there is an inherent risk of that surgery. The anesthesia went perfect. Just after a half, everything went sour on this case. After a half hour in there, it's the only one I've never been able to find the retained testicle. I could not find the testicle. And after a half an hour with injectable anesthetic, I thought it was, we need to wake the horse up. So as the horse was waking up, a piece of bowel popped out and I hit it with the needle. She says I didn't lavage the abdomen or anything. We used 500 cc's of, well, 250 cc's of saline with betadine. I exteriorized the bowel. And then we rinsed it with saline, another 500 milliliters. And I could not find where I poked the needle in, so there was nothing to sew up. Anyway, I closed the horse up and he had a good recovery. But we did not find the testicle. Because I nicked the bowel accidentally, not on purpose, totally an accident. When I nicked the bowel, I started the horse on antibiotics. The strengths of all those antibiotics, they only come in one strength, so there's no need to put it on the medical record. There's no need to put on that. Gentamicin is the only one that comes in a different strength, and I put 3,000 milligrams, we'll give it to the horse. So that's a moot point. Concerning cremation, she stated, I called her right away in total disclosure that I made a mistake and accidentally hit the bowel. Concerning a specialist, she could take the horse anytime. She never mentioned a specialist, and anytime that would have been welcomed. But anyway, I started the horse on antibiotics and treatment because I was concerned about the peritonitis. When the horse did die, I discussed it with the owner about cremation. There is no cremation place in Tucson, nor is there a backup surgical place in Tucson. They had gas anesthesia. She did not want to take the horse all the way to Phoenix. So there was no negligence. There was true concern, and we called other veterinarians. We called all around trying to find a place to cremate the horse, and we could not find one. And maybe I was over blunt with her, but it was certainly devastating to me and obviously to Tina, which is understandable. The horse, the examination prior, we didn't really even do a big examination. The horse was obviously in good health. He was eating, passing manure, running around like a stallion, and he was in beautiful flesh, beautiful condition. His flesh was good. There was nothing obvious. We also castrated another horse of hers at the same time, and everything went perfect. The cryptorchid, everything went sour. I guess that's all I need to say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we do not have the complaint present?
Okay. I think we're...
So Dr. James, you are the lead on this case.
Yeah, so this case I actually did have quite a few questions. Certainly some of it was clarified in the statement we just heard. But I think my concern here was more around the communication, and I was struggling a little bit because the narratives of what had been submitted were very different between the owner and the veterinarian. And certainly with the number of violations, there were some questions there. I think some of the medical records may be clarified by the fact that equine practice has a more limited number of drugs, and so some of the things don't have to be documented as well, like he was saying. But I still feel like there's quite a few violations out there from a medical records standpoint. I feel like in this case I want to make the motion for 24-122 to move it to an informal to get more information. Unfortunately, I feel like without the owner being here today, we may not get that information, even moving it to an informal. But I feel like that would give us the clearest picture of what's going on.
Second.
Okay, so there's a motion and a second to move to informal. Any other discussion?
Yes, I have a question for Dr. Janes, if I may. Dr. Janes, it was the respondent mentioned that there wasn't the need to write the dosage amount in the record because it was standardized.
Yes.
I assume that's standardized only for horses.
Nope.
It's standardized for small animals too?
Yeah. Well,
same dose?
It's the same, yeah. It says the injection comes in one strength. So
yeah,
it's not a statute requirement if it only comes in one strength.
So what he's saying is that those antibiotics only come in that strain, so he doesn't have to document the strength that was used.
But
and
he did put the volume.
Applies to small animals.
Yeah. And he did put the milligrams of the one that does come in a different strain.
Okay.
He did, yes.
But we, in small animals, we have a lot more milligram options. Do you know what I mean? So we almost always in
different
small animals would see the actual milligrams in there. That's why it's a little different.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All is in favor to move to informal?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Case 24-126 regarding Irene Brady, DVM. Tracy, could you please read the front load?
Yes. Case
24-126,
the complainant is Linda Scopes, the respondent is Irene Brady, DVM. On June 11, 2021, Leah, a 14-year-old female domestic long-haired cat, was presented to respondent for shaking her head. Respondent evaluated the cat. An ear infection was noted as well as weight loss. Blood work was performed, and the cat was discharged with clavamox and trazodone. On June 29, 2021, the cat was presented to respondent for a recheck. Complainant reported the cat's appetite was poor. The ear was improving, but not back to normal. Respondent recommended continuing medication for another 2 weeks. Complainant advised that she would not be continuing the antibiotic. On July 2nd, 2021, complainant called respondent's premises to report that she was no longer using the ear medication as she felt the cat was experiencing side effects. A follow-up exam was offered. Complainant declined and approved Meritaz to assist with the cat's inappetence. On July 6th, 2021, the cat was dropped off to respondent for evaluation due to vomiting, not eating, or drinking. The cat was laterally recumbent and minimally responsive. Therefore, respondent recommended transferring the cat to an emergency facility. Complainant declined. The cat was administered sub-Q fluids and discharged against medical advice. Later that day, the cat presented deceased. Complainant expressed concerns with typos on the medical record and blood report, and staff misidentifying the medication that complainant thought was affecting the cat negatively. The committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-0.
Thank you. We do not have a respondent, but we do have the complainant present. If you'd like to step forward. Could you please state your name for the record?
Ms. Scopes.
We're so sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Do you have a statement that you'd like to make? You have up to 5 minutes.
I wanted to say that Leah was a cat, and the blood work was sent in to the lab identifying her as a dog. The results came back for a dog. The lab, with those results, on the back of it, I believe, is where it was. When I sent it in, I couldn't print on the back, so I sent it a separate page. But what it said was they notified the vet that the differential appears to be species other than indicated on requisition, on the requisition form, and that they should call the reference library to verify. The vet ignored that. So Leah never got results for a cat, and whatever might have been wrong with her, we don't know, because the vet blamed the lab that it was their mistake. Well, whoever's mistake it was, somebody should have said, okay, we made a mistake, we still have the blood, let's run it for a cat. None of that happened. They never retook the blood, they just kind of forgot about it. And so then I had asked the vet if the mouth was part of the exam, and she nodded her head, but she just stared at me. So I opened Leah's mouth as best as I could. At that time, my left wrist was broken, and she barely looked in. But then in her report, she comes up with all these things that are wrong in Leah's mouth, which I found out later, she is afraid of pets. She had been bitten once, and she had plastic surgery. So anyway, after Leah died, I had sent an email to them with some questions, because the Miritaz, I had read, can cause a lot of problems in appetence, which is kind of weird because it's supposed to be an appetite stimulant, but it can cause all kinds of things. And if any of this other stuff, her kidneys or her heart or anything else was bad, nobody would know it because we didn't have the correct blood tests. Then, on a lot of the records, it says that Leah is a dog, was a dog, that she was a short-haired cat. She wasn't, she was a long-haired cat. On the document that said that she had passed away, it said sex unknown. I mean, it's like everything is all jumbled up and wrong. And all of this confusion at their office is, you know, to me it's not acceptable. A voicemail that the office manager left me only answered part of my questions in my email, and she said that I had told her that I thought Metavet, was the drug that caused the problem. I never heard of that drug before. I think they got their patients mixed up. I had only mentioned about the Miritaz, that it caused the inappetence and all of that. I have no idea what that other drug is. It's on a voicemail that I had submitted, and I believe that Tracy let you hear it. There's just too much confusion in that place, and Leah didn't have to die. She had a little issue with her ear that, you know, I thought it might be mites, but she wasn't treated for what she had. She wasn't treated for anything and wound up dying. And I just think that the way they run that place is deplorable. And that's basically the story.
Thank you.
Thank you.